You're listening to another great Torah class, recorded by TorahAnytime.com.
It's a very special schus to be able to be here tonight. I thank my dear friend, Rav Michal Barnett, for inviting me. I thank Rav David Weinberger and the officers of Kin for allowing me to speak to this tremendous crowd. I want to start off with a great, great story. I have permission to tell this story because it has to do about my dear friend Michal, and I see his mother-in-law is here and his twin brother Simcha. This is a story that will tell us why we came here tonight. See, all of you know that Michal and Simcha, Mitch and Steve Barnett, grew up in Long Island. And they were twins in the true sense of the word. They were twins, they did everything together. The same schools, the same friends, the same sports. They even became Wall Street stockbrokers together. And one of the things that they both enjoyed doing was taking bike trips all over the world. And it happened one time that they decided that they were going to go to New Zealand. And Simcha told me this story once on Yontif after Kiddush. I invited him and he tells me this unbelievable story. I took out a map because I had no idea. I'd never been to New Zealand. And he told me that New Zealand is actually two islands. There's the North Strait and the South Strait. And what happens is the North Island and the South Island, and it's separated by a body of water. And what all these young fellows were going to do, young men and young women that were going to drive through this island, through New Zealand, they were going to go from the top of the North Island to the bottom of the island, take a ferry, come across, and then they would go through the South Island. 1,500 miles. 1,500 miles of a bike tour. So they come and they do the whole North Island and they're all on the ferry. And then when they're on the ferry, they get ready to start biking in the South Island. And the South Island, as they started going, they realized there was a long trek of an 8-mile trek. But it was up a mountain. And Simcha told me, Simcha told me that it was almost like going straight up a wall. It was so steep, it was so difficult. It was the most difficult path they had ever taken together on any bike trip, any place. And of course they all went very, very slowly on this narrow straight, going up this almost straight wall. And Simcha's behind quite a few guys as they're all pedaling up. And then he told me he noticed something very interesting. That every fellow had a backpack because every night they camped out someplace else. And he noticed that the guys ahead of him, in order to make their weight lighter, they would take something, they would unzip the backpack, throw out a wrench, throw out a heavy book that they were reading, throw out an extra wheel that they might not need. Because in order to get to that mountain, they were going to have to get rid of some of the baggage that they were carrying with them. That was the only way they were going to be able to get to the top of that mountain. And Simcha told me that when he became a Baal Tshuva, he thought back about that trip and he realized that the only way that he could reach the top of the spiritual mountain was only if he was going to get rid of some of that baggage that he'd been carrying with him. And I couldn't get over that thought, that we all want to get to the top of the mountain, and the only way we can get to the top of the spiritual mountain is to get rid of some of that baggage that we've been carrying with us. So Simcha told it to me after the first minyan. I couldn't wait to tell it to my children at the Suda on Yontif. I tell it to my children, and my son says to me, Ta, he says, that's a pasuk. I said, that's a pasuk? Simcha's story is a pasuk? He said, yeah, listen to the pasuk. I couldn't get over it, my son Avram. He says, Mi Yala Bahar Hashem, Umi Yokum Bim Koim Kachoy. Who is the one who can go up to the mountain of Hashem and who can stand there? Nechi Kapayim Uvar Levov. Nechi Kapayim, the one who is clean, who gets rid of all that baggage. Asher Leinos Al Asov Nafshi, the one who gets rid of that baggage. I couldn't get over it. I take a look at the Pasuk, and there's a wonderful Sefer on Tehillim called Mikdash Ma'at. And he says, David HaMelech is telling us just exactly what Simcha Barnett told us. He said that a person is trying to get to the spiritual mountain, he cannot get there if he's carrying a masa, Amasa stands for Mem, Shin, or Sin Aleph. That's Momoin, Simlois, and Oichel. If a person is involved in money, everything is the dollar. If a person is involved in clothes, the latest styles. If a person is involved in the best restaurants, that's a burden, that's a masa that he's carrying that will never be able to get to that spiritual mountain. He's got to drop those things. Those can no longer be the priorities. Miyala Bahar Hashem, Umiyokum Bimkaim Kachoy. Who is the one who can reach that top of that spiritual mountain? Nechi Kapayim. He's got to get rid of that. He's got to have clean hands. He can't carry that heavy mountain with him. That's what a Baal Tshuva is all about. That's what our lives are all about. Understanding what priorities are all about, reaching the top of that spiritual mountain. But I remember we were speaking, Simcha and I, and he pointed out a very beautiful point after I told him about this pasuk. And he said, it's not only to get the Baal Tshuva, to have that moment of inspiration. Many of us on Yom Kippur, whether it's Kol Nidre or Ne'ilah, or sometimes Hashana Rabba, sometimes a different time of the year, we all feel that tremendous burst of inspiration. And we are all Miyala. We all feel elevated. But the idea is miyokum bimkaim kachoy. Medav bleib in dort, and you have to be able to stay there. It's not only just getting up there at that moment of inspiration. You have to be able to stay on top of the mountain. That's what we have to learn in our own lives, and that's how we have to inspire someone that we want to bring to tshuva. It's not only a momentary inspiration. It's an idea of keeping everyone and ourselves as well on top of the spiritual mountain. So I want to share with you a very interesting Ramban. And the Ramban is based on a story, not a famous story, that takes place in Tanakh. There was a great king that most people don't know. His name was Yoshiyahu HaMelech. He lived in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. And I want to show you how in Tanakh he is described. In Malachim Beis, Perik Chav Gimel, Pasik Chafei. It says, "Ukomoyu loyhoya lefon of Melech, asher shovel Hashem." There was never anyone who returned to Hashem like this king. B'chol avavai, u'b'chol nafshai, u'b'chol ma'oidai. We can all understand that's a play on words of Kriya Shema. No one ever returned to Hashem like this one. B'chol avavai, with his heart and his soul and all his possessions. K'chol teres Moshe ba'achrov lo'kom k'moy. There'd never be anybody like this Yeshua. So you can imagine how special he was. Now in his time, it tells us in Tanakh, it's hard for us to imagine. Imagine if we had a Beis HaMikdash today. Could you imagine people wouldn't go daven there? But that's what happened. People started going away, and they didn't come to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash fell in disarray. And it was very depressing to this wonderful king. And there was a Kohen Gadol, his name was Chilkiyahu, and he started putting money aside so that someday they would be able to refurbish the Beis HaMikdash, because you know when a building doesn't get used, it falls apart. The ceiling begins to crumble, the walls cave in, and then, you know, nobody's taking care of it. And that's how the Beis HaMikdash was, it's hard to believe. During the first Beis HaMikdash, during the time of Yeshiyahu. Then it comes a time when Yeshiyahu realizes that he has inspired his people, and now they'll be able to go back and refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. So he tells his secretary Shafan, go to Chilkiyahu. Go tell him, now is the time. Now is the time that we should take the money that he saved and we'll refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. So he goes to Chilkiyahu, and he says, I have a message from the king. Now's the time. Go to your treasure chest where you saved the money, and let's refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. So they open up the treasure chest, and in there he had hidden a Sefer Torah. Now, based on this, I believe, this has nothing to do with the speech, but I just want to tell you, based on this thing which we're going to hear right now, I believe that every single person who gets an aliyah, except the Kayan and the Levi, because they're always getting the same aliyahs. Every person who gets an aliyah, there's a message for you in those words that the Baal Torah is reading. Hashem made it. You could have gotten Shishi, you could have gotten Shlishi, you could have gotten Revi. There's always a message. I know, I always find a message for myself in there, in the aliyah that I get. And I get it from right here. Because what happened is, they open up the treasure chest and there's a Sefer Torah that's open. And they both look at it. Chilkiyahu HaKohen and Shafan, and listen to the pasuk that they see, and they become so frightened. Oror asher lo yokim es divrei ha-Torah hazois. Cursed is the one who doesn't observe this Torah. So here now they want to do a good thing. They want to refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. They open up the treasure chest. The Torah is yelling at them. Arur, cursed is the one who doesn't maintain this Torah. So they're frightened and they run back to the king, to Yeshio HaMelech. And they say, Yeshio, this is a terrible omen. We open up the treasure chest and this is what Hashem's message is to us. So he says, I got to see it myself. And the Ramban is in Dvarim Chav Zayin, Pasik Chavav. And it's on this Pasik that tells us, Orur Asher Lo Yokim Es Divrei HaTorah Hazois. Listen to what Yeshiyahu does. He sees this Pasik, Al Dovar Hazeh, on these words, writes Yerushalmi, Korah Yeshiyahu V'Omar. When he saw these words, he said, Olai Lahokim, I will observe it. And Omar Rabasi says, you know what Yeshiyahu meant when he said, Olai lahokim, I will observe it. And he says, Lomad, this is a Yerushalmi. If somebody learned, the Limeid, and he taught, the Shomar, and he observed, the Asa, and he did, Vayasipeg biyodai lahachzik, he was able to give encouragement to others, he was able to be machazik other yidden, Veloyhirzik, and he didn't give encouragement, Hareza bechlal orur. Such a person, chas v'shalom, is oror. You know what oror asher lo yokim as divrei HaTorah Hazois means? You have to go out and be mechazik other people. It's not good enough if you learn the daf. It's not good enough if you daven. It's not good enough if you do mitzvahs. That's not enough. You want to stand on the top of the mountain? You got to be oror asher lo yokim. That's only if a person is doing only for himself. That's cursed. Being a person that's mekayim the Torah according to Yeshua HaMelech, is you go out and you mechazik others. You have the opportunity, and we all have that opportunity. You can't live only for yourself. That's what we said before. Miyala b'har Hashem miyokum v'mkoyim kachoy. Who's going to be up there on the mountain? You know how you stay on the mountain? By not being there yourself. Reaching out to other people. Being mechazik other people. That's what Kirov is all about. We're all in this together. Each one of us is individual, but we're all in this together, all the brothers and sisters. And that's our obligation, and that's what we come here for tonight. All of us know the dramatic moment that we will read in a few weeks in the Torah, when Yehuda is standing in front of Yosef, and Yosef says, hey, listen, you know, we had a deal. Whoever whoever's knapsack the Becha was found in, that's the one that stays with me here, and you all guys go back to your father. So Yehuda says these words, Ki ech ela el ovi. How could I go to my father? V'hanar einenu iti, and the child is not with me. He says, I made a promise to my father, I'm going to bring back Binyamin. I cannot go back to my father. Ech ela, how am I going to go up to my father? V'hanar einenu iti. So Chassidus Rebbeim teach this in different ways. Listen how they teach this. No one lives forever. How are we going to go up to our father at the end of 120 years? Vahanar, and our children are not with us. The children didn't remain as from as we were. The children didn't remain the way we wanted them to remain. What are we going to answer? How are we going to go to our father in heaven? What are we going to answer after 120 years? There's another way how to understand this pasuk. How am I going to go to my father, Vahanar, and my youth is not with me. I messed up my youth. I wasted that time, that creative time of youth. You're going to have to answer what you did with your youth. And another pshat is v'hanar. Nar means vibrancy. The pasuk tells us, U'meshor se Yeshua ben Nur nar lo yamish mitoicha oihel. Yeshua was considered a nar. At that time he was 56 years old. 56 is not a nar, it's not a young man. It means vibrant. He was vibrant. A person can never lose their vibrancy. Ech el alavi. How are you going to get up to Shemayim? I'm vanar and then eat. You know, you got burned out. Nobody can get burned out. Yid's not allowed to get burned out. And I believe that we can extend it. Ech el alavi. How are we going to go up to our Father in Heaven, vanar? And the youth of Klal Yisrael, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, not only in college campuses, out in the streets, all over the country, they're not with us. Baruch Hashem, Far Rockaway. Baruch Hashem, Flatbush, Monroe, Los Angeles, Chicago. What about all the other millions of Yidden? Imagine if you lived on a corner and then on the other side of the street, was a fellow, a Frum guy, who had five children. And four out of the five children became not Frum. Your heart would break for this guy. This guy's an Elacha guy. He goes to daven every day. He does mitzvahs. He buys the most beautiful lulav in Esrig. He tried his best. Four out of five kids went off the derech. Your heart would break for this guy. Listen to this. You know how many Jews there are in the world? 13.3 million Jews. That's how many there are in the world. You know how many are religious? 1.8 million out of 13.3. You know what that means? 86% of God's children are off the derech. Wouldn't you feel bad, just like you feel bad for the guy in the corner? We should cry for Hashem. Four out of five of his children are off the derech. You ever think about that? Our father has lost more than four out of five of his children. That's terrible. He needs our help. He wants our help. You can imagine Hashem crying every day. When is this organization going to get off the ground? It's not only Eish. It's not only our Sameach. It's not only Ura. It's not only Jep. It's everybody. As the Rav said, you don't have to be a professional. You have to care about our Father in Heaven. Four out of five children. We have to fill in Achrayus. Miyala b'har Hashem u'miyokum b'mkoyim kodshoy. U'miyokum means orur. Asher lo yokum is divrei atayr azoyis. We can't only live within our own Dalet Amos. You know, there's a very interesting pasuk. It says, ki yiyeh b'cho evyoin. My mother tongue is Yiddish, so I'm just going to teach it in Yiddish and then explain it in English. Asit zayin and dir an oraman. Ki yiyeh b'cho, there'll be within you a poor person. Me'achad achecha, one of your brothers. Your heart should not close. You have to help him. So the Or HaChaim says, why does it say there'll be within you? There'll be a poor person in the community. You got to give tzedakah. So the Or HaChaim teaches us an amazing thing. He says, why are there poor people out there? Wouldn't it be nice if everybody had money? You know what, Rashi? You know what the Or HaChaim says? B'siboscha. They're there because of you. It's your fault. You know why? Because you're being tested. Those people are poor because Hashem is testing you in your neighborhood. What do you do for the poor people? Do you support them for Shabbos? Do you go out to help them? Do you invite them for Shabbos? If that's the case, we have amongst ourselves people that know nothing about Yiddishkeit. Why are they there? I believe it's the same reason. I believe it's the same Or HaChaim. They're poverty-stricken in spirituality. They're poverty-stricken in Frumkeit because Hashem is testing us. This is a generation that Hashem is testing us. This is the mitzvah of our generation that Rabbi Mitzker ever said. The mitzvah of our generation is Kiruv. We are being tested, every single one of us. If there'll be among you an Evyon. I want to tell you a story that I've never told before. I heard this story when I was in England recently. A guy stopped me in the street. Wherever I go today, people stop me and tell me stories. It's wonderful. 98 out of 100 I can't use, but I'm a nice guy. I listen to everybody. But those two out of the 100, it's worth listening to everybody. And by the way, you told two great ones. I don't know if I could print the thing about the skirt. Art school will never get it by, but besides that, it's okay. But listen to this. In England, in Golders Green, there's a fellow, his name is Aaron Benderovich. Aaron Benderovich is a Rebbe in the Hasmonean school. The Hasmonean school is the high school, the menorah school is the primary school, the elementary school. And he has a house in Golders Green, and he, in the basement, he rents out rooms to Bachrim, to students, yeshiva Bachrim, university students. And he's a big machnas oirach. And what happens is that every Shabbos, all these Bachrim or the students, they always invite other people, friends that they've met throughout the week, and he has everybody for Shabbos. So it happened a while ago. One of the friends invited a university student, and everybody's sitting around the table, and everybody introduces each other. So Aaron, Rabbi Benderovich, asked this guy, where do you come from? He says, I come from down south in England, in Southampton. He says, Southampton? Oh, I have a story that happened to me in Southampton when I was a kid. So everybody's interesting, yeah, what happened in Southampton? He said, I'll tell you an amazing thing that happened to us. He said, many, many years ago, I was a child, I was in high school, and we had a class trip. It was near the end of the year, we were going away on Thursday, we were going to be away Thursday, we were going to come back to London on Friday. And we were going to go to a place, I looked it up on the map, it's a place called New Forest. New Forest is a place of gorgeous trees and gorgeous areas and hotels. It's a real resort area. And the boys were going to be there, probably, you know, kind of a Lag B'Omer type of trip. And they took two vans. One van had the food, and they went down. They went to New Forest. And they were there Thursday, Friday. They come back. They start coming back. Of course, they had two separate vans. And he says the van that he was on broke down. And the driver was not happy because, you know, 16 boys in the van. And there was no way that he could get it fixed. And the train schedule was nothing that they could get back to London on time for Shabbos. They had no food. It was in the other van. And most of the food had already been eaten in New Forest. So they said, well, where are you going to drop us? You got to take us someplace. He said, I'll take it to the next big city. What could I do? The van is broken. There's no way I can get it fixed until Sunday. Now, I don't know why. I don't understand this part of the story. For some reason, they couldn't call anymore. They didn't have cell phones. And obviously, it's many, many years ago. And people in Golders Green, nobody knew where this whole van was. And it was Mamash Avelis, because somehow they were not able to communicate with the people, with the families in Golders Green, or where these kids came from. So now these kids were dropped off in a place called Southampton. So the Madrich, the Rebbe of these boys, said, let's go to the shul. Let's find out if there's a shul. Because they insisted the guy has to take them to a place where there's a synagogue. They walk into the shul Friday night. They take a look at the people. There's no way they can eat by any of these people. You take a look at shul. You see, you can't eat by any of these people. So went over to the rabbi. They said, listen, you know, we have no food. Is there anything that the shul has that we could have? So he says, well, I got a box of matzahs. And the wine that we make Kiddush on Havdalah, that's, you know, if you accept this Hashgacha, that's fine. Otherwise, you know, if you don't want to eat any place, there's nothing we can do for you. So they said, okay, we'll manage. So you have 15 boys sharing one cup of wine or a bottle of wine, because they have to have for tomorrow also for Kiddush, and a box of matzahs. The next morning, he said, we had no food. Shabbos ends 11 o'clock, you know, in the summertime. So literally, these boys fasted kamat the whole day. And he said, it was a wonderful Shabbos. We sang and we danced. We had the whole shul for ourselves. We slept on the floor in the shul. It was a wonderful experience in Southampton. He said, isn't that amazing? So this student who came for Shabbos says, you think that's amazing? Let me tell you what's amazing. He says, you know, I come from a family that's not religious at all. Nothing. He said, many, many years ago, my father wakes me up on a Saturday morning. And he says, Ron, we're going to synagogue. I said, what synagogue? We never go to synagogue. He says, Ron, it's your bar mitzvah today. He says, what do you mean, Dad? You never told me about that. He says, no, you don't know, but bar mitzvah is when you get 13 years old, and, you know, my parents took me to the synagogue. I want you to come. He said, what am I going to do there? He says, look, I don't know what you're going to do there. It's a bunch of old people that go there. The religion is almost finished. But listen, I just got to do it. I don't want my parents looking down from heaven. You know, I don't want to feel guilty. I'm going to take it to the synagogue. So I schlepped myself to the synagogue, you know, expecting to see a bunch of old people. I come in. There's a bunch of young guys there. This guy's reading the Torah. And this guy's dancing. And this guy's, you know, singing. And it's unbelievable. And then I said to my father, you know, let's invite these guys. Where are these from? I thought you said there's no young people here. So my father went over to one of you fellas, and you said you're not eating because it's not kosher. I never heard the word kosher. I said, what does kosher mean? So one of the boys explained it, and I found out that 16 boys were going to fast the whole day because they didn't eat kosher. And I said to my father after Shabbos, I want to keep kosher. I want to be like those kids. And my father said, you're crazy. He said, I could be crazy, but I want to be like those kids. He says, now you don't realize it. It was because of you that I began becoming frum, and I'm frum only because of you. Could you imagine? Here a group of guys goes down. Now we know why they were stuck in Southampton. Was that Kirov? Of course that's Kirov. There's two types of Kirov, and that's what I want to talk about. There's passive Kirov and active Kirov. By every single one of us being Erlich Yidden, you are makar of other people. As Rob said, you keep a Shabbos table. You're not doing anything that's any different. You're not even talking to them that they should be ashamed of Shabbos. But when you come to shul on time, and you daven next to your children, and you learn, and people see that you're an Erlich Yid, that's Kirov. That's the first step of Kirov, being an Erlich Yid. So every one of us is a role model, whether we know it or not, or like it or not. I'll give you an example. Some of you may know, I have a dear friend who lives in Kew Gardens. His name is Nussan Meltzer. Many years ago, I get a call from a fellow. up in Westchester. A guy tells me that he had a boy and he wants to do the bris. I say, okay, fine. How'd you get my name? He said, I got your name from Nussan Meltzer. He lives in your neighborhood. I said, oh, that's very nice. And I thought the guy was somewhat religious. He says, Rabbi, I want to make the bris on Sunday. I said, you can't do it on Sunday. You know, that's the 10th day. You got to do it on the 8th day. He said, Rabbi, I can't do it on the 8th day. You know, I got to go to work and my family's not going to be able to show up. I got to do it on Sunday. I didn't want to get into an argument with him right away. I gave him the whole list of items. Then at the end, I said to him, I said, how did you tell me you got my name? Through Nussan Meltzer. I said, do you know, if Nussan Meltzer would find out that his cousin had a bris on the 10th day instead of the 8th day, he would feel terrible. He said, you think it would make a difference to him? I said, I'm positive. He said, okay, we'll do it the 8th day. Fine. He said, but I can't do it in the morning. I got to do it in the afternoon. I told him before the Shkia. Fine. 5 o'clock, I walk inside. The guy's like in a restless T-shirt. I mean, you know, the Grateful Dead type of, you know, T-shirt, whatever. But we did the bris. I was sure Nussan Meltzer was going to be there. I don't see Nussan. I can't understand it. I come to shul in Shara Torah on Shabbos. I go over to Nussan. I say, Mazel Tov. He says, for what? I says, let me call you. You're kidding. You don't know what I'm talking about? I said, your cousin had a boy. He says, what cousin? I said, Nussan, you got to be kidding. Your second cousin in Westchester. Oh, she had a boy. I didn't even know. She said, what do you mean? She didn't call you? Nah, she called me a few months ago. She said you were expecting. I gave her your name. I said, Nussan, don't you realize when you get to Shemayim, you're going to get the reward for a bris being done on the 8th day. You won't know what Hashem's talking about. He says, Pesach, I don't know what you're talking about. I said to him, don't you realize, Nussan, because you're an Erlich Yid, you never spoke a word of Kirov to that family, but you're an Erlich Yid, and they know that you mean it. When you learn and when you daven, that's why the bris was done on time. Every one of us has to know that we are role models for our second and third cousins, or our co-workers, or our neighbors down the block that are not frum. That's why you have to be so careful in every mitzvah that you do, and every piece of Gemara that you learn, and every time that you daven. You have to do it with Ehrlichkeit because people watch you. And those who you never expect are watching you are indeed watching you. And one more example of what it means, passive kiruv. I have a dear friend, Aryeh Rodin. Aryeh Rodin got smicha from Chavetz Chaim. He goes down to Dallas. And he starts a shul. So many of you know, how does a shul start? A shul starts in the rabbi's house. So Aryeh tells me one night he was preparing an adult education lecture. And a guy, Leonard Froman, walks into his house. He never saw this guy before. So they get into a whole conversation. After a half hour, Leonard says, Rabbi, this is the greatest conversation I ever had about religion in my life. I'm going to give you a check of $2,000. I'm going to send it in the mail. And sure enough, in the mail, a few days later, comes not $2,000, but $3,000. And Leonard starts becoming so involved in the shul, and he becomes an Orthodox person, he becomes a Baal Tshuva, and he gets other people involved, and they build a building that's still standing today. Aryeh Rodin is still the Rav, that's the Young Israel of North Dallas. Nebuch. When Leonard was 49 years old, he had never been married, obviously had no children, he had a heart attack and he passed away. So at the Levaya, his mother got up and she said, I want to thank Rabbi Rodin. I want to thank all of you in the synagogue. Because of you, he became closer to his roots. He became closer to his religion. And so every penny that he gave to the synagogue, I'm going to match it. And on the spot, she wrote out a check for $50,000. At the Shloishim, at the 30-day memorial service, Rabbi Rodin got up to speak. And he said, I remember the first day Leonard came. And after we got into a whole conversation, he told me he was going to give him the check. I said, Leonard, you know, there are a lot of synagogues in Dallas. This is in my house. Why did you come here of all places? He said, I'll tell you why. He says, you know, I just got back from a trip in Israel. It's the first time I was in Israel. And they took us all over. The last day they took us to the wall. They took us to the Kaisel. And they took us to the Kaisel, they took us to the wall. I didn't know anything. I Shema Yisrael, that's the only thing I knew. I saw people writing their names on a piece of paper, and I put my name on a piece of paper, I put it into the wall. But standing right next to me was a guy, he was so connected, he was praying so hard. I wish I could pray like that. I wish I could have been connected to God like he was. I was going to give him money, but I couldn't give him money. I'm not going to defile the moment. So when I got back to Dallas, I went to the Jewish bakery and I said to the lady behind the counter, I want to describe a guy to you who I saw in Israel praying. If that guy came to Dallas, what synagogue would he pray in? So the lady behind the counter said, he'd go to Rabbi Rodin's synagogue. So that's why I came to you. So Rabbi Rodin said, imagine when that Yid gets to Shemayim. Hashem's going to say, Rabbi Yid, because of you, a shul was built in Dallas. He'll say, Hashem, what's Dallas? Dollars, I know. I never heard of Dallas. Right? And of course, Hashem's going to be right. Because that guy was a role model, even though he didn't realize it. And that's the first lesson of Kirov that we have to learn. Every time you learn, you can't waste time learning because you don't know who's watching you besides Hashem. When you do a mitzvah, it has to be Mishlei Musa. It has to be in its entirety. It has to be in sincerity. You can't talk by laning. Because if you talk by laning and you come late to daven, other people learn from you. And that's passive, the opposite of Kirov. That's Chas V'Sholem Richuk. You know what the Gemara tells us? How are you Makayim V'Yahavta Es Hashem Alekecha? You love Hashem Sheyehei Shem Shamayim Messiah V'Al Yadecha. The way you act, people should love Hashem. And people see the way you speak so nicely and you're so honest in business. What will people say? Ah, oh, look how wonderful it is this person learned Torah. Look how wonderful his father, his Rebbe, taught him Torah. Woe are those people who don't have Torah to learn. That's what Kirov is all about. That's the first lesson of Kirov. Making sure that you do everything with Erlichkeit. Because out there you're having a hashpah, besides all the Kedusha that you add when you're learning and when you're davening. But it's not enough. Passive Kirov is not enough. It's important. It's the first step, but it's not enough. And I want to show you where we learn that it's not enough. The Alkot Shemoni and Shmuel tells us, we all know Elkanah had two wives, Chana and Penina. And every year he used to go with Penina and all his children, and he used to go to the Mishkan Shiloh. And every year, he didn't go Route 80, the same route. Every year he took a different route. And the Alkot Shemoni tells us, every year he took his Winnebago and he camped out with all his kids on a different route. Every year. And what did he do? And then when he would see people in the street, he would say, hey guys, you know I'm coming to Mishkan Shiloh, why don't you come with me? We'll see the Kayan and we'll all be inspired together. So every year he took a different route to bring people along. He was Makar with them, he said, come with me. We'll be able to have a spiritual time in the Mishkan Shiloh. And then listen to this. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hashem says to him, Elkanah, Ata hichrates Yisrael l'kapschus. You help Jews come to Kapschus, v'chinach them in mitzvahs, and you are machanach them in mitzvahs, v'zochu rabim al yotcha. Many people became religious because of you. Ani oitzi ben mimcha. You're going to have such a child, sheyachriya as Yisrael l'kapschus. You are going to have a child because you made so many frum. And you were concerned about other people. And every year you took a different route. And you were machazik and you did kiruv. I'm going to give you a child who's going to teach Torah to the whole Klal Yisrael. And there, hola marta, shebeschar Elkanah, Shmuel. What was Elkanah's reward? Shmuel. Listen to this. Vesanefesh asher osa b'choram. We all know. Avram Avinu, not only did he work on himself, but he helped bring other people to understand about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Zok Rashi shehechnison tachas kanfei hashchina. And now watch what Rav Chaim Vital tells us. Lama zocha Elkanah lahamit Shmuel. Why did Elkanah have Shmuel? Sheya oyla l'rega, because as we said, he went different places. Va'avram lo zocha l'kol ma'loisav elam mishum v'tzanefesh asher osa b'choran. All the milos that Avram had. Why did he have Yitzchok? Why was he our father? You know why? Because he cared about everybody else. And now listen to what he says. Frightening words. V'chol roshei hadayros, all the heads of the generation, einon zoichin oy einon nenoshim, they'll all be rewarded or punished, ela al sibazu, only on this. What kiruv did they do? That's what Rav Chaim Vital is telling us. Every leader, you know how he's going to be judged? Did you reach out to somebody else? Did you make sure that somebody else was from besides yourself? And not only that, Rav Chaim Vital tells us, frightening. He says, if we would only know the great schus of what it means to be makar of other people, we would run after it as if we run after life. Elkanah, Avram, Rav Chaim Vital, that's what they're telling us. Kiruv means not only for yourself. Of course, every person has to learn. And sometimes a koil or fellow will ask me, so what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to drop the Gemara and go out and do Kiruv? Here's your answer. The answer is you bring the fellow into the koil. And you learn Tanakh with him. And you learn Mishneh Berurah with him. That's also Kiruv. And you go out and you donate part of your time. Nobody's telling anybody to stop learning. But just like you give a tenth of Meiser, you give a tenth of your time. That's what Rav Moshe used to paskin. You give a tenth of your time for Klal Yisrael. And if you want it to be in learning, that's wonderful. That's also Kiruv. But a person should understand that they have to give to others. You know, I remember, Reb David remembers, we grew up in Kew Gardens together. So we had the great schus of having Rabbi Yaakov Teitelbaum as the Rav, certainly in the shul that I davened. And I'll never forget when he told this story to Rav Shalom Shadron, because he witnessed it. In 1923, there was a Knesiyah Gedolah, he was a very young man at the time. And there were tremendous tzaddikim. The Chofetz Chaim was there, the Church of the Rebbe was there, Rav Chaim Oizer was there. So the question is, who are you going to get to speak first at this convention? So of course it was the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim got up to speak, and then at night he said he wanted to speak again. And you know, the organizers, you know, first of all, how do you say no? But you know, he got so many big tzaddikim. How could you let him speak a second time? But how could you say no to the Chofetz Chaim, right? So they had no choice, so they let him speak. So listen to what he said. He said, I spoke this morning about going out to be makar of people. And I heard rumblings in the hallways afterwards. I heard people were quoting the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, Omer Esh Lokesh Kishoyt Atzmecha. First you got to enhance yourself, make yourself perfect. V'achakach Kishoyt Acherim. Then you're going to make others perfect. So people were saying, what is the Chofetz Chaim talking about? First we have to perfect ourselves, then we can go out and work on others. He says, I want to tell you a story. He tells a story, the Chofetz Chaim, at the 1923 Knesiyah Gedolah, he tells a story about a fellow who built a whole community. And he built this whole community. It's a beautiful community. And finally, when all the buildings are done and everybody moved in, they invite him for a meal. And he's very happy. And all of a sudden, they serve him some tea. And he drinks the tea and it's awful. And he says, what's going on here? He says, well, it's your fault. You built it, you know, like Far Rockaway, right on the water. So what do you think is going to happen from the beach water? You know, the salt gets into the water, so the water is salty. He said, excuse me, guys, you never heard of a strainer? You take a strainer, you strain out the salt, whatever, and then the water is fine. He said, oh, we didn't know that. Okay, a few weeks later, he hears that half the city burnt down, half the town burnt down. He comes running. He says, what happened here? He says, well, you know, we were going to put out the fire, but you told us every time we want to use the water, we've got to strain it. So by the time we strained the water, you know, the half the place burnt down. He said, what are you guys, crazy? When there's a fire, use any water you can. So the Chofetz Chaim says, when the fire of apokursis is burning, when the fire of a lack of knowledge is burning, of amaratzis is burning, you use anything you can. There's no time to perfect yourself to that level of perfection that you want to reach before you go out to be makar of others. There's a fire burning. There's a fire of apokursis. There's a fire of amaratzis. There's a fire of hatred to Orthodox Jews. There's a fire of assimilation. We can't wait to strain our water. We can't wait till we're going to perfect ourselves to be the perfect human being, and then we're going to be makarov. We'll lose everybody like that. As Robert Abdavid mentioned, we're losing today more people than we lost in Europe, Rahman al-Islam. How is that happening? That's happening because in America, you know, you can do anything. So I want to share with you something, how I believe that we can all become Kira professionals. Not by joining necessarily, as we said, NCSY and URA and JEP and AISH and Or Sameach. And you know, when you're the second or third speaker, one of the biggest worries that you have is that the first or second speaker is going to say exactly what you want to say. So sure enough, Rav David starts quoting a pasuk and my heart falls because the first pasuk he's quoting is the pasuk that I want to say. But thank goodness he focused on a different part of the pasuk. But Rav Yankov said a fabulous pshat. When Yankov Avinu goes to those shepherds, he starts out and he says to them, Achai, me'ayin atem, my brothers, where are you from? So they answer Choron. So Rav Yankov says, what do you mean, Achai, my brothers? He doesn't even know them. What do you mean he's calling them my brothers, my good pals? So Rav Yankov writes, he saw what was going on, and he knew he wanted to give them Musar. He knew he wanted to improve them. How's he going to improve them? You cannot give Musar to somebody. You cannot be makar of another person unless you love them. Every one of us must gain within ourselves a level of Avas Yisrael. We have to love every brother and sister in Klal Yisrael, regardless of their level of frumkeit. If you love them, you'll reach them. If you don't really love them, you're just making them your lulav and your esrig, your chefetz shel mitzvah to be makar of them, it'll never work. All those things that Michal suggested, whether you send an email or whether you give a gift, those people know if you really like them. If you like them, they'll accept it. If they think you're just trying to proselytize, it's never going to work. We have to gain within ourselves a love of Klal Yisrael. And sometimes it's at your own expense. I want to tell you one of the most touching stories that I ever heard. Listen to this from the Kloisenberger Rebbe. I'll never, ever forget this. I remember when Rabbi Osher Weiss told us at the Knessia, at the Aguda Convention, we were just sitting there bawling. Listen to this. It was Erev Yom Kippur in the DP camps after the war. And the Kloisenberger Rebbe, the Heilige Yid, who had lost so much, he lost a wife and 11 children in the war. And now in the DP camps, he's rebuilding everyone. And it's before the Yom HaKodesh, and he's working on himself, and probably thinking and davening and learning Muslim, preparing for the special day. And a little girl comes in to him, and she says, Rebbe, I lost my father in the war. My father always used to bench me, Erev Yom Kippur. I have no father, please Rebbe, bench me. So he put his hand over her head, he said, Ichel Zayin Dein Tata, I'll be your father. And he gave her a bracha from the depths of his heart to this little Yisayma. And she saw that he meant it, and he gave it with feeling. And she was so elevated, she ran outside and she told her friends, all the other friends that Nebuchadnezzar Yisaymais. And she says, go, the Rebbe will give you a bracha. And they started lining up. Each one of them, the Rebbe said, Ichel Zayin Dein Tata. And he took his hand and he put his hand over each of the children one at a time and gave them a heartfelt bracha. 87 girls he benched, almost till Kol Nidre. Is that what the Rebbe was planning to do? Erev Yom Kippur? He wanted to obviously become closer to Hashem, prepare himself for the Yom HaKodesh. But that's the greatest way that you could prepare yourself for the Yom HaKodesh. Reaching out and giving a bracha and validating a Yasim or a Yasima. So when the Rebbe died, many years later in Eretz Yisrael, there was a woman came with a little package, and she's sitting up front by the Rebbetzin and all the children, and they ask her who she is. She says, I want to tell you a story. She says, I was in the DP camps, and I was walking in the street, and the Rebbe saw me. I wasn't wearing socks. And the Rebbe said to me in Yiddish, how does a Jewish girl walk around without socks? And I said to him, Rebbe, socks? I'm worried about that. I don't have bread to eat. Who's worried about socks? So the Rebbe sat down on the floor and he took off his own socks and he gave it to me. He says, here, my tochterl, wear these. And she took out the socks from the bag. She says, these are the Rebbe's socks. That's what the Rebbe did. Because he cared about this woman and he cared about Tznius. And when he realized that it wasn't really her fault, she had no bread, she had no money, she had no anything. So he gave her from his own. I can never, ever forget this story. This was told to me by the person himself to whom it happened. In those DP camps, the Kloisenberger Rebbe was told about a certain boy. This poor boy, he lost his father, he lost everybody in the war. He took off his yarmulke in the DP camps, he didn't want to be frum. But everybody knew he came from a frum family. And they tried as much as possible to get this kid to put on tefillin, he wouldn't do it. To wear a yarmulke, he wouldn't do it. So finally they went to the Rebbe. And they said to him, you know, it's Rabbi Leibish's boy, who's not frum anymore, he's not wearing tefillin, and he doesn't want to wear a yarmulke. So he said, let him come in to me. So they went to him, they said, the Rebbe wants to see you. So he knew the Rebbe was going to try to convince him. So he decided he's not going to get into a conversation. One word answers. So the Rebbe sees this boy, and he says to him, this is Rabbi Leibish's kind, right? You're Rabbi Leibish's son. He says, yeah. He says, I remember you as a little boy, you used to be a masmid. He said, yeah. And then the Rebbe turned to him and said, you're angry, right? He looked at the Rebbe. The Rebbe said, I lost a wife and 11 children. And you lost your father and your brothers and your sisters. And then the Rebbe held him and he said, they took the best ones and they just left us. They took the best ones and they left us. And the Rebbe started crying. And the boy started crying. And the Rebbe was crying on his shoulder. And he was crying on the Rebbe's shoulder. And they both kept on saying, they took the best ones and they just left us. For a half hour, all they did was cry on each other's shoulders. That they were the only ones that were left. They should took everybody else and just left them. And then the Rebbe kissed him. Didn't say a word. Just said goodbye to him. And that night, the boy learned Krishna for the first time. And the next day, he put on his yarmulke. This man is living today in Baltimore. I've spoken to him so many times. And he always says the same thing. He said, everybody spoke to my head. The Rebbe spoke to my heart. That's what Kirov is. Not in the head, in the heart. If you really love another Yid, and you show them that you love them, that's really what they want. They want to feel connected. They feel connected at your Shabbos table because you have love for your children and love for everybody in Klal Yisrael. You don't even have to proselytize. And I just want to add to what Rob said. Many, many people are intimidated because they don't know the answers. I want to give you a way how you can get every answer to every question. It's all in two tapes, two series of tapes. Mutti Berger and David Olofsky. If you get those tapes of Mutti Berger and David Olofsky, first of all, I don't know if you're allowed to drive when you listen to David Olofsky's tapes. If anybody knows what I mean. They are so hysterical. There are times when I have tears in my eyes that I can't even see out of it. I just have to pull up to the side because he's so hysterical. I remember the first time that I saw him, I said to him, you know, he's a heavy guy and he's got this great belly laugh. I said to him, David, you know, you look exactly like you speak. He said, I didn't know I looked so bad. But he's great. And you gotta, he's got 60 questions and answers, the most common 60 questions and answers that are asked to Balei Tshuva. You must get that. And Mutti Berger is, again, on an intellectual level. These guys, Michal, I'm sure you know both of them. Almost any question that you can answer, and it is in Indian, Damash and Toshev. Damash and Toshev, you have to know how to answer. And so whether we follow all the advice that Michal gave before, inviting, emailing, giving a gift, it all starts with Achai. It all starts with an Avas Yisrael. The Tzidkas HaTzadik says there's three loves that you have to have. Avas HaTorah, Avas Hashem, and Avas Yisrael. And if we could learn those three loves, Avas HaTorah, Avas Hashem, and Avas Yisrael, then we can be Makarov. I want to give you another suggestion that was not mentioned tonight. And that is that every single one of you here can become a partner in Torah. And I want you to write down this telephone number, because you can have a connection to someone across the country and it wouldn't cost you a dime. As a matter of fact, oh, it's on here? I didn't realize. Huh?
101 Learning.
101 Learning, fine. So let me give you the number. It's 1-800-788-3942. Again, 1-800-788-3942. Or else, if you want to remember it in a way that never helps me because I can never find the numbers, 1-800-STUDY-42. STUDY-42. You call them tomorrow morning. They will give you a chavrusa, men with men, women with women, across the country. I know my wife for many years learned with a lady in St. Louis. For other years, she learned with other people. The idea of partners in Torah is through the learning. The frumkeit comes through. You never try to proselytize these people. But when you're learning with sincerity and you get to know the person, and of course, obviously, you talk a little bit about each other, all of a sudden you become a friend with somebody across the country. And all of a sudden there's a bond, there's a connection. You know who learns? With a girl in Alaska, Rebbetzin Reisman. Not the Rebbetzin Reisman from over here, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman's wife. The one who gives the Tanakh shir. So I once spoke to her about it because they told me in Partners in Torah, she learns with this girl in Alaska. And I had to once speak for Partners in Torah, so I interviewed Mrs. Reisman. I said, you know, I never made a call to Alaska. Tell me who this girl is. I want to speak to her. So I called this girl in Alaska. She doesn't know who I am. And I say, I hear you learn with Mrs. Reisman. She says, yeah, we learn wonderful books in English, stories. I said, oh, wow, that's great. What stories are you reading? She says, well, The Bamboo Cradle. I said, oh, really? That's the only one? Oh, she says, no, there's another one. There's a difficult word in the beginning of the title. So I'm thinking Magid, right? No. So she says, a tzaddik in our time. I said, is there anything else? You know, strike two already, right? I'm trying to hear that she's reading the Magid books. So then finally, as she says, oh, there's a third one. It's wonderful. Guard your tongue. So that week I sent out 4 Magid books. 2 to the girl in Alaska and 2 to Mrs. Reisman. Rav Huttner asks a very interesting question. Rav Huttner tells us, it says at the end of Parshas B'Shalach, "Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, b'char lanu anoshim, v'tzei hilochem b'amalek." So Rashi tells us an interesting thing. Moshe is sitting with Yeshua. Moshe is the Rebbe, obviously. Yeshua is the Talmud. And he says, "B'char lanu," together, let's pick out, you know, the warriors. Leave a loch, Hashvele, made him feel like an equal. From here you see, Yehi Kvoy Tamida Chavav Alecha Kishalach. The covet of your Talmud should be just as important as your own covet. Here Moshe is talking to Yeshua, it's the Talmud to the Rebbe to the Talmud, and it makes him an equal. B'chalon, let's do it together. From over here we learn out that you got to give covet to your Talmud. So Rav Hutna asks, why is it here by Amalek? It should be by Hasinai. It should be by Vishinantan Levanecha and Krishma. What's it got to do by Amalek? And he gives a great answer. And he says, where's Amalek today? Where do you see Amalek today? And he says, you know, Amalek is brought in the next pasuk. Milchama l'Hashem ba'Amalek midor dor. Amalek maintains a war from generation to generation. You know what Amalek is? Not letting us pass the heritage of Torah to the children of the next generation. Midor dor. That's what Amalek is. All the secularism, all the materialism, all the culture out there that's poisoning the minds of our children and grandchildren. That's Amalek. How are we going to get our kids to listen to us? How are we going to get those who are not yet there to listen to us? You have to validate these people. These people come from different backgrounds. They have different understanding of what life is all about. You can't just tell them that they're ridiculous and has no meaning, has no value. You can't just knock away a person 20, 25 years of his life. You listen to them, you talk to them, you validate them. You talk to them like intelligent people. And when you give them respect, and then you give them that love of Achai, that's how you can win them over. Rav Aaron Kotler writes, Ha'olam miskayem rak al yedei ha-magishim achrayis v'loy al yedei ha-oimrim sholom alecha nafshi yoporshim min atzibo. Klal Yisrael exists on those people who feel an achrayis to the tzibor. Not that they're going to say, I'm going to learn and I'm going to daven and sholom alecha nafshi, I did my thing. It's not enough. There's no question. Passive kiruv is important. Doing mitzvahs, learning Torah, it's all important. It's most important. But we can never forget that we have to reach out to other people. That's what Rav Aaron is telling us about. And that's what it says in the beginning of the Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Volozhin, his son writes that his father always used to criticize him. How come you don't get involved with other people? And he told him three words, and these three words should be our motto for tonight. Loi la'atzmoi nivra. You are not created for yourself. You're not created so that you should become rich and famous. Hashem gave you talent. Hashem gave you a personality. Reach out to other people. Loi la'atzmoi nivra. That's what kin is all about. We're a family. We're together. Loi la'atzmoi nivra. Hashem didn't create you just that you should become the tzaddik hador. Hashem created you that you should be able to reach out and spread and give out from all the good that you have. The Torah, the Yerushalayim, the Chesed, the Ava. Give it out to other people. That's what life is all about. I just want to end with this great thought from Rav Zelig Epstein in the name of Rav Shimon Shkop, and end with a beautiful, touching story. Rav Zelig once said that the Gemara tells us at the end of Pesachim, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, Hashem said to Avram Avinu, B'cha Chosmin, with you we will end the bracha of the first bracha of Shemay Nesra. After all, it says, Elakei Avraham, Elakei Yitzchok, Elakei Yaakov. So why don't we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mogen Avram, Yitzchok Yaakov. Hashem says, no, Avram, B'cho Chosmin, only with you. V'heyei Bracha, that's what it means. You will be the bracha, you will be the one that they will sign off the bracha with. So Rav Zelig said that Rav Shimon Shkop once asked, why Avram? What did he merit that the bracha ends only with him? So he said, because Yaakov had a father and a grandfather that were religious. Yitzchak had a father that was religious. Avram had nobody. Avram had nobody, and he became Frum. And he became the first Baal Tshuva, in a sense. That's why he merited that the bracha should be by him. So Rav Shimon said, B'cha Chosmin is on a deeper level, not only the bracha, but time. When Hashem is going to end time, it's going to be the time of the Baal Tshuva. Right before Mashiach, when Hashem is ready to sign off time, B'cho Chosmin, your people, Avram, the Baal Tshuva, they're going to be those people, that's the ones that are going to bring Mashiach, because that's going to be the end of time as we know it. And how lucky and how fortunate all of us are to live in this great, great generation of Baal Tshuva. And how lucky we are that Machol and his friends started this great organization, because every single person that we bring back to Tshuva, is one step closer to Mashiach. It's one step closer to that B'choch Chaisman. So I just want to end with this beautiful story. It's a very interesting question that everybody asks. It says that when Yosef sent his brothers back to Yaakov, Yosef realized now, they realized these are all brothers, and he sends them back to Yaakov, and he wants to make sure that they bring back Yaakov in a hurry. And he tells them, Al tirgazu b'darach, don't become agitated in the way. The simple meaning is that all the brothers, they're going to argue on the way back. Why? What did we do? Whose fault was it that we sold Yosef? It's your fault. It's your fault. Don't get agitated on the way. Just forget about it. Whatever happened, happened. Go back and bring me back Yaakov. That's the simple meaning. But Rashi brings the Medrash. Al tirgazu b'darach. Al tisa'asku b'dvar halacha. Don't get involved in the dvar halacha. Don't start talking and learning, because then you might get lost. I ask you. Imagine. 22 years they thought they got away with it. And now they realize they didn't get away with it. Now they got to go back and tell Yaakov what happened all these years. How they kept it from him. You think they could talk and learning? How in the world could they talk and learning? They're going to talk. They're going to figure out a plan. What are we going to tell Yaakov? 22 years we lied. How did this happen? How long are we going to tell our father? What do you mean, Al tirgazu b'darach? They're going to talk and learning. Who could talk and learning at a time like this? Listen to this story. Once again in the DP camps, a Rav in Los Angeles wrote this story in his memoirs. He said he was a rabbi in one of the camps, and his job was to give out food, to give out some money, and to get regards, to give regards from different camps to different people. It's a long line of people that are standing up in front of him. And all of a sudden, a short little man comes up to him and he says, Chaplain. Says, Chaplain says, what can I do for you, sir? He says, I need a Bava Kama. He says, a what? He says, you never heard of a Bava Kama, Chaplain? He says, what do you mean? Of course I know what a Bava Kama is. But I'm here to give out money and food, you know, and sustenance and regards to people. He says, listen to me, the man says. 4 years ago, when I was in Hungary, the Nazis, I was learning in my kitchen. I was learning Bava Kama. They came and they took me away, and I haven't opened up a Gemara in 4 years. You get me a Bava Kama, and I'll nurse myself back to health. I don't need anything else. I just need a Bava Kama. The chaplain writes that he was so overwhelmed by this person that he just closed his office and he ran to a shul that had been ransacked, a little place not far away. The Gemaras were ripped and torn, whatever, but they were there. Sure enough, he finds a Bava Kama and he brings it to this guy. And he gave it to him, and the guy was so happy. Eventually the fellow was able to get out. He built a whole family of children and grandchildren. Nebuch the man was just nifter, an elderly gentleman. Built up his whole life. How did that happen? You know how it happened? Because in the final analysis, when you learn Torah, Torah Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nofesh, the greatest thing that you can do for a Baal Tshuva is make a Seder and learn with him. Shabbos table is very important. That's how you start. But no community, any place, grows without a yeshiva. You want to know every community that falls apart? Because there's no yeshiva there. There's no kollel. Torah is the center of Klal Yisrael. Learn with the Baal Tshuva, because they're in turmoil. Learn whatever you want. Learn Mishnah Berurah. Learn Chumash. Learn Tanakh. Learn Gemara. Whatever he wants to learn. But learning is the center. That's the Meshivas Nefesh. Torah Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nefesh. We live in a difficult world, with Shrek L'Chatzoros and Shrek L'Chat problems, challenges and issues. That's why Yosef said to his brothers, Al tirgazu b'derach. He knew they had to have Yishuv Adas. He knew they had to calm down. How are they going to calm down in this terrible moment of turmoil? So they would sit and talk and learning for a while. They would quiet themselves down. They would have Meshivas Nefesh. And then with Seichel, then they would be able to tell their father what they were going to tell him. That's the answer to Meshivas Nefesh. That's the answer how we connect in the utmost level with the Baal Tshuva, to keep him going. To keep him going so that he's going to send his children to yeshivas and grandchildren, to yeshivas and Beis Yaakovs. Make a seder with them. Because Teres Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nefesh. So let's review everything that we said, then we'll end with a great chazal. Let's remember, Miyala Bahar Hashem and Miyakum B'mkoyim Kodshoy. We all want to get to the top of the spiritual mountain. We've got to get rid of some of that baggage. That's what we got to help the Baal Tshuva do. Get rid of some of that baggage. But if we want to reach that mountain, Miyakum B'mkoyim Kodshoy, we want to stay up there. How are you going to stay up there? We got to make sure that not only we learn Olai L'Hokim, that we're going to go out and we're going to encourage others. We have to remember How are we going to go to our Father in heaven? The youth of Klal Yisrael is not with us. 4 out of 5, Nebuchadnezzar Frum. Our Father in heaven, Kaviyachal, is crying. He needs our help. He wants our help. Those people are out there. We're being tested. As the Novominsky Rebbe said, our generation is being tested in Kirov. This passive Kirov. You have a Shabbos table. You daven well. You learn well. You daven at the Kaisel, and other people see you and they become religious because of that, because they're so inspired. You don't even realize the guy's going to have a bris on the 8th day like Nassim Meltzer's cousin, and he doesn't even know it. Why? Because he's an Erlich Hayid. But as Chazal tell us, it's not enough only to be from yourself. Of course there's passive Kirov, but active Kirov. Like Elkanah, he went around and he got people to go to the Mishkan Shiloh together with him. Avraham Avinu was a Nefesh Asherasu B'choran. That's what the Chofetz Chaim is teaching us. We can't wait until we become that perfect human being that we want to become. When a fire of apokursis and amaratis and immorality is burning, we have to go out. Achai, we have to love each other. If we love each other, we'll be like the Kloisenberger Rebbe. Erev Yom Kippur is able to spend time with those girls. He's able to give the socks, his own socks, to that girl. He's able to cry with that little boy, that Yosem. And then the fellow will say that everybody spoke to his head, the Rebbe spoke to his heart. So whether you invite, whether you email, or whether you send a gift, it has to be with love. It has to be with sincerity. We could all undertake a chavrusa and partners in Torah and reach out to somebody across the country. Let's remember, it has to be with respect. That's how we're going to be able to pass it on to the next generation. And as Rav Aaron writes, Klal Yisrael exists only by those people who feel an achrayas for others. We should all feel fortunate that we live in this great generation of Balei Tshuva, B'chol Chosmin, Avraham Avinu's people. That's where Hashem is going to sign off time. And finally, it's a limud haTorah. When you learn with others, that's Teres Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nefesh. It's an amazing Gemara in Bava Kama. The Gemara Kama in Bava Kama tells us, Samach Amid Beis, Kisei Tzeyei Shemotza Koitzim. If somebody starts a fire and it goes out, so what happens? Yishalem HaMavir Es HaBeira. The one who started the fire, even though he started the fire here, but it went out someplace else, the guy who started the fire here, he's responsible. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Devish says, Olai L'shalem Es HaBeira. I have to pay for that fire. I burned the Beis HaMikdash. It's my fault. It was my decision. So I have to pay with the fire. How am I going to pay the fire? Someday I'm going to build up the future Beis HaMikdash. What is the exact lashon? Ani osid levnoisa be'esh. Esh is going to bring back those people. With Esh, Esh HaTorah, or Sameach. The literal meaning of the Gemara is that the walls of the Beis HaMikdash are going to be protected by a fire. But maybe B'derach Drush, it's the Baal Tshuva of movements that's Esh tonight. Esh of inspire, Esh of kin, Esh that we have within ourselves, that fire to reach out to other people. The Eibusha should help, that all of us should be able to be Baguda Achas. That's what it tells us in the Tanchuma. And Yisrael Negolin, Achiyu Baguda Achas. Klal Yisrael won't be redeemed until we're all as one. All of us should be as one, with love and concern, reaching out, and in that way we'll be zeichah to see Mashiach in our time. I thank you for inviting me, and I thank you for listening.
TorahAnytime.com sends cameras out day and night to video and audio record the best Torah classes around. We then make them available to you for free. So what are you waiting for? Watch, listen to, and download lectures on TorahAnytime.com today.